Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dad Starting Over podcast. And before we get started with today's episode, I want to get a couple of pieces of business out of the way. First of all, I write and sell books. You can find my books at dadstartingover.com/books. You can also find my books at any of the major retailers online at amazon.com, Audible, Awesound, Barnes & Noble, and Apple Books. Look for my books titled The Dead Bedroom Fix, which is my bestseller. Now What? A Guide for Men Starting Over in Life After Infidelity, Breakup, and Divorce, as well as my book Red Flags. Lastly, I have started a members-only side to my website called the DSO Fraternity. At the DSO Fraternity, we have live member meetings, access to all of my books at no additional charge in both PDF and audiobook format. We also have Facebook discussion groups for members only. And lastly, articles and audio for members only that you are free to discuss on the website. Check out the DSO Fraternity at dadstartingover.com/join. And now on to today's episode. So Jason, tell us a little bit about yourself. Ages, you and your wife, kids.
All right. I am 48. My wife is 44. I got two kids. I got a trans boy. He's a junior, 17 years old, and a freshman. He is 15. So okay.
When you say trans boy, that means born biologically is female and has since transitioned.
Correct.
Okay. Very cool. That has to have a whole set of I don't want to say difficulties or challenges in itself.
Yeah. To say the least.
Yeah. It was just something, not to deter this conversation going down that road, because I'm sure that's a whole interesting phenomenon in itself, but was that a strain on the marriage?
You know, honestly, I really think that we were both like, look, you know, we love our kid and wanted to be happy. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely times where it was like, my wife was like, you know, he doesn't know what he wants, you know, like in eighth grade and freshman year, like, and the longer he keeps being like, yeah, dude, I want testosterone therapy, which my wife is against until he's 18, because then he can pick, you know, choose it for himself, where I'm like, look, I think we should do it now, you know, because the kids, he was suicidal last year. He was all super depressed, you know? And
wow.
So yeah, I would say if it was a strain, it just felt like normal to me, like a regular relationship, what you would go through, but it wasn't like we got to the point of like, this is it. I can't stand this anymore. We're getting divorced, anything like that, you know?
Gotcha. Is this something that you saw in looking back early on, from when they were an infant on, you saw the tendencies no. towards the male behavior, or this is something that came on after puberty? Or
yeah, this is something that just happened, I think, in middle school, seventh or eighth grade, you know, and just more like along the lines of he's got sensory disorder or something, sensory processing disorder, and I think he might be a little tiny bit on the like autistic scale. Yes. And
well,
I think
I'm sure you've read on the subject that they're finding that one of the fastest growing communities of trans are autistic females.
Yep.
So that's interesting. It's a whole interesting. Yep. So anyway, yeah, not to deter there, but I find that whole side of things really fascinating. So kudos to you for being supportive of him. Enduring all of that and being a good dad. So that's awesome for you. But that's not what we're here to talk about. What we're here to talk about is what exactly brought you to the whole Dad Starting Over community, the website?
Well, what happened was, I think for the last 6 to 8 years, I was really like struggling with our marriage. And I was like, definitely always having the talk, always like thinking about like ending our marriage and wanting to have different plans. Like, oh, as soon as the kids go to college, I'll divorce her. You know, if I could just get away this weekend, maybe I could just cheat on her and then, come back and I'll feel better. You know, all these different things going through my head. Mm-hmm. And, I swear it came up on Instagram, an ad for a dead bedroom fix, but I definitely had seen it on Facebook afterwards, I think. But anyway, it was one of the two. And I was like, I looked at it and it said Dead Bedroom Fix and something about like, does this look familiar? And are you tired of a sexless marriage? And I was like, uh-huh, it does. And yeah, fucking A, I am. So I was just like, $10, I'm in. What the, who cares? What's $10? I'd been to marriage counseling with her for probably over 2 years. And then I did, after that, singles counseling. And I did it with a woman. And one of my girlfriends was like, what are you doing? I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, I would never in a million years be talking to a man about my problems. And I was like, oh, thanks. And then I found this guy and I did, you know, did with him for about two and a half years. And it was really awesome, but it's thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It was like, I worked on myself. Great. But it wasn't like I was working on myself. Like your book, I'm a wrestling coach. I'm a wrestler. I'm like, I like the tone of it. There's a challenge and there's just like, it tells you almost like a game plan in my head. Like, okay, you can do this, you know? And so after I bought the book, I bought the, what do you call it? The computer version. I don't know what that's called, but I didn't want it. I didn't want to have a book around the house like that. So I read it on my computer and it was just freaking just what I needed. But I'll tell you what, man, it was like, somehow there was like probably the Facebook group. But once I found that, it was within like a week, I was like, you can't just sit here and read, you got to participate. And I messaged you in my mind thinking like, well, this guy's an author. He's super busy. Maybe he'll get back to me, you know, in a week, maybe 2 weeks, if you're lucky, a month. And I swear I was out walking my dogs when I did it. And you responded within like 5 or 10 minutes. And it made such an impact on me. I was I was blown away. I was like, I can't believe that he's taking his time out for me. It just made me feel like it reinforced everything that you had in your book in my mind, like times 10. I was just like, all of a sudden I was like, this guy is not some like, you know, I live in San Diego, California. Like there's a lot of, I'm liberal, but there's a lot of gurus and yogis and
fucking, Oh, sure.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And I was just like, you know, this guy is just, is he what he says he is? And that solidified it right there for me. And I was all in and, you know,
very cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that. So, and glad to have you on board, but let's travel back in time a little bit into what got you to this position. When do you feel like when you started going off the rails in the relationship, so to speak, can you pinpoint it to a specific time, a series of events?
Definitely pinpoint it to a certain time. Now, you know, now that I look back, I'm like, oh, after I'm reading people's stories and it all relates. But like, do you want me to go into like how I met her and our past, or just like where I realized?
Well, if you think it helps us to paint a picture, you can kind of give us the bullet points on how you guys met and what your relationship was like early on, leading up to the point where you took a left turn.
Okay. Sounds good. I am the type of guy where like, I always had a girlfriend. I wasn't like dating a whole bunch of different women. Like I didn't lose my virginity until I was a senior in high school. And that was my first real girlfriend. And then in college, I had a girlfriend for like, you know, fucking, I don't know. I think it was 7 years. And I tried to break up with her a few times and she George Costanza'd me. Like, she was like, oh, you can't break up with me right now. I'm like, oh, I guess not. You know? And then
I love using George Costanza as a verb.
Yeah. Right.
It's a verb.
It was like, you can't break up with me now. My grandma just not died. I was like, oh yeah, you're right. You're right. You know? So it's like, I love you, but I knew I wasn't in love with you. And so I was still just strung along. And then I moved to San Diego. I'm getting my teaching credential. And the first day in class, I sit next to this girl. And I was like, damn, I was just talking to her. And I was like, I need to find this girl again tomorrow. And that was it, man. I just sat by her in class, started hanging out with her, talking to her, broke up with my you know, girlfriend at the time that I'd been with for 7 years and asked her out like 2 days later. I was like, you're fucking awesome. And then, yeah, man, it was awesome, hot and heavy, the whole honeymoon phase. But it, to me, it seemed like it was a honeymoon phase for a long time. Even after kids, I would tell people, yeah, I would tell people like, oh, I've got the top three relationship in the world. You know, we are top three as a couple. Really stoked, really happy, and like best friend kind of thing. And the things she would complain about were my partying, like drinking, smoking weed, and the sex. Like, man, you're always wanting it. You know, you're always like, and I'm like, yeah, I am. I'm always horny. I could always be down, you know, that kind of a thing. And then, so we're both teachers, and she stays home with the kids until my youngest was probably like pre-K, like I think that's four years old, you know, right before kindergarten. And she goes back to work at my oldest elementary school. She's the computer teacher there for 2 years. And I lose my job. I'm a middle school teacher. I loved middle school. I lose it we were in Colorado. I lose my job because I, you know, those like foam pool noodle, like martial art boppers that they're kind of like practice swords. A kid in my class had given me it. He's like, oh, hey, Mr. Mayor, aren't you ever going to break that out? And I was like, oh yeah, you're right. This is the motivator, kids. And I started bopping desks like, hey, let's go. We guys got to focus, you know, got to do some work. People are cracking up. And then I had this physical education class, PE class, and I started bopping kids on the back and on their, you know, looking back, this is stupid, but their butt and their freaking legs. And this one kid went and he said to someone in the office, like, he hit me in the face and he called me names. And I didn't know that he was trying to get at me, and his parents were lawyers. They had tried to sue the school district. It was just a bad situation.
Oof,
but, so in the end, I didn't lose my teaching credential, but I lost my job there. And that's about 2011. So about from 2012, I get my name cleared and all this, but I'm not allowed to be hired back in that district. So that was like the one of the, I don't know what that's called, protocol, one of the rules, you know, from the court decision after you do like 50 hours of community service, stuff like that. So we were like, you know what, screw it. We've been here for 10 years. We love it, but we're going to move back to, like, my wife's from San Diego area. I was from San Jose. So we moved back here. And from that point on, it was definitely like, I could just, now looking back, like, oh yes, that's what happened. Yeah. We lost the job. So we get back home. I couldn't find a teaching job. It was super hard. I was subbing. I was sitting at home all day. She was writing. She didn't want to teach. She was trying to do a novel. So we're both at home, you know, that kind of a thing where you're just like, I'm depressed. I didn't know I was depressed. I was fucking just an ass, you know, but anyway.
So from her perspective, if you had to put yourself in her brain during that time, how would she verbalize why it is that the relationship went off the rails at that point? Is it as simple as she lost respect for you? She had her sense of comfort and security was injured in a way. She had this dream of being the novelist and so forth, and you weren't there as to be kind of the security blanket for her because you lost your job. And did she also look at you as, I guess, did her respect for you falter somewhat? Did she look at you as kind of a loose cannon, so to speak?
Oh, for sure. I would say all those, you know, definitely lost respect for me. Definitely was like, I remember one time she was just like, you know, yelling at me or kind of like saying like, I guess I'm the type of person that needs to be married to someone that their husband that works or that can be, I can look up to. And I'm just like, oh fuck. Like,
Hit you right between the legs there.
Oh yeah, man.
Yeah.
And what do you call it? Like the breadwinner type of thing, you know?
Sure.
That it all makes sense with what you've talked about or what I see on the Facebook page, you know. I'm like, yep. Mm-hmm. And so all those things definitely were a factor, or in her mind, like, yeah, that's exactly it.
Now, did you internalize that and take that on as, I think, less of her because she's being so, quote, shallow, and her love for me is based upon my ability to earn an income, my ability to provide for the family? Or did you take that on as, man, I'm a failure, I need to step up my game?
Oh, I think I was more like, dude, what's her fucking problem? I've paid for everything. You know, this, it's always been me. I've always been the one that's worked. I've always, you know.
So you felt you had built up some cachet over the years of being a really awesome spouse. And this little hiccup, although it's not little, but this hiccup, this little fork in the road, shouldn't be that big of a deal in the grand scheme of things.
Exactly.
And you would have much preferred if she would have been like, you know what, honey, bad stuff happens, but I believe in you and I love you. We're going to get through this. Let's go get you a new job. That would have been ideal. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen.
Yes. She would say stuff like, why don't you find something you love? You love surfing now. You've picked that up. Why can't you go be a surf teacher? And why, you know, oh, why don't you look into doing this? And what? And I'm like, dude, all I want to do is teach. Okay, well, you're not being too proactive about it. And I'm like, fuck, I can't even get out of bed. Fuck you. Like,
so you did go through a very real depression during this.
Yes, for sure. And I've never felt I was been depressed my whole life. So looking back, I definitely went through a depressive state.
So then what do you do at that point? How do you start to turn things around? Or do you? Does it take a while?
Oh my God, it takes a while. Yeah, it takes counseling. It takes, the one steady the whole time is I kept coaching middle school wrestling. I would just, you know, out in Colorado, at my middle school I taught at, I coached there. And then when I came back here, I found the local middle school and talked to the high school coach and said, hey, is there someone coaching? He's like, yeah. I'm like, can I get involved somehow? He's like, oh yeah, you guys can be the, you know, the two head coaches. And since I had free time, I would coach right after school. And then the other guy would coach the other days after the high school would get out, you know. So it worked out perfectly. And that steadiness, I think, helped me. And then I started subbing in that middle school where I was at. And then I started subbing in different areas. And so, yeah, it seemed like the only way to get a teaching job was you had to get known somewhere, because I was applying all the time. But to get known in California, you have to sub at a school or you have to know somebody there. And so after about 3 years of that around the areas, I did get a job, and they wanted me, instead of doing English, which I had done, they had a position for PE and ASB. I was like, sure, I have a PE credential. I don't know what ASB is. I'll do it. And it was really cool. It was trying to change the culture on campus. So I was like, this is fun. But I was a 0.8 teacher. I wasn't full-time, and they had to do cutbacks after 2 years of 1.5. And I was the first person to, person hired, the first person to go.
Ouch. So that didn't do well with, I imagine that gave your wife, when you were hired, a bit of a feeling, okay, let that. And then all of a sudden it's right back to where you were again.
Yes. But instead of getting into a depressed state again, I asked a couple friends and they were like, oh, there's this public charter school. It's a homeschool. And I'm like, what the hell? I've never heard of it. So I went in and they were like, yeah, you know, if you be a student supervisor and you teach on Mondays, you know, if there's ever an opening, we will hire you. And I was like, sure, whatever. And I did my time last year. I mean, student supervisor is like yard duty. Like, it's a fucking, a trained monkey could do it, you know? But I'm teaching on Mondays all the time. And then they were like, the pandemic hit, COVID, and over the summer their enrollment went up 42%. So they were like, they had to hire some teachers, and I'm right there, and they knew who I was, and they're like, oh, you're awesome, would you like to do this job? I'm like, hell yeah, I would. So now I'm like, I swear to God, I am living my dream, because this homeschool job, it's not traditionally teaching. Like, you have, when you teach, you're there 7:30 to 3:30. This is more like I got to be there Mondays and Tuesdays, and the other 3 days of the week, it's like you have to just answer emails, you have to do stuff. But I can do that anytime I want. So I'm like lifting in the mornings, and I'm surfing if I want to, and then I can go take the kids to their freaking doctor's appointments. My wife just got hired this year as a sixth grade teacher, but they're doing it all in person. This is no distance learning. So she's Monday through Friday. She's there 7 to 4. So it's like our roles are reversed in the way of like the traditional mom and dad, you know? So I'm just like, I'm loving it. I can't believe how like stoked I am.
Now, at the time when you found my book and so forth, were you in this new job at that time?
Nope.
Okay. So then that begs the question of, we're jumping ahead here, but presuming that you're in a better place relationship-wise right now with your intimacy and so forth, you know, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Was it the book? And was it the subsequent attitude change? Was it the job? Was it a combination of all of the above? How would you describe it?
It was the book, because I found the book in that September, and that was that September, probably like a week or two later, that's when I started the yard duty thing and teaching on Mondays there. Mm-hmm. So my relationship was still like sexless, or, you know, like for me, it was like, I was used to like 3 times a week. And then it was down to like once every 2 weeks, maybe once a month. And I was just like so frustrated and so pissed. Like, she doesn't love me. Why doesn't she love me? And I was 245. I was like the heaviest I'd ever been since my second kid was born. And the book just helped me go, all right, stop fucking complaining. Stop bitching. It's your fault. You need to man up and take that on. And I was like, just blaming her, you know, like, or trying to figure out why she doesn't want to have sex, you know? And I just stopped all that and like did my job, which was so easy, and did a really good job at it, like teaching on Mondays, because I had all this prep time, and I just concentrated on like going to the gym and I'm sorry, I'm losing all the thing. There's like 5 things that I have written down in my other room, you know, like it was like a cheat sheet in the back of the book that you could just pull out. And I was like, oh my God, this is so awesome.
Do you want to take a moment to get it?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So, like the 5 mistakes, like I'm looking at this cheat sheet that it like came with, and I made a copy of, I think, and it says gift giving. Oh my God. I can't tell you how many times I would like give her something expecting like sex, you know, that kind of thing. Doing more chores. I don't know that I would do more chores, but I would always be like, oh, Amy, look what I did. I, you know, fucking cleaned the dishes, or I did this, you know? And she's like, yeah, I do that all the time. Like, whippity fucking do. And I'm like, what? You know? Happy wife, happy life. Oh my God. That was my number one, like always walking on eggshells, never like, oh dude, that was like my mindset. Like, just keep her happy. Like, don't rock the boat. You know, maybe you'll get sex, and if you have an argument today, there's no way you're gonna. I was just like tied to that. Cause no one ever told you, I don't know how to explain this, but no one ever explains any of the things or tells you any of these things, or, you know, pretend that no women exist. Maybe, but, and then the talk always. So
you always have to talk with her about things.
Oh, fuck.
Well, the picture you're painting for me is I can split it up into 2 different categories. One is kind of very nice guy behavior, which, as you know, is super typical amongst the readers. That's why I always suggest to people that my book, you go out and read No More Mr. Nice Guy by Dr. Robert Glover, who has been on the, in our fraternity meetings in the past, which is very cool. Another thing I see is that sticks out was your inability to cope when shit hit the fan with the job, with the infamous pool noodle incident.
Yes.
You know, you could have gone a couple of different paths there, and you chose the path of, I'm just going to shut down. And boy, I can see as a wife how that would be really, well, frankly, unattractive, concerning, angering, like it would, you know, your whole foundation of your world would be shaky at that point because your husband is not able to deal when shit hits the fan. So what is it? Two things to look at. Where do you think the nice guy stuff comes from? And why do you think it is that you respond in such a negative way to the losing your job?
I think that those are fair questions. I think the nice guy thing just comes from the my upbringing. Like, I remember my mom saying, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. And I'd be like, oh, okay, that makes sense. You know, like, don't call people an asshole, even though you think of them, you know? I went to an all guys high school called Bellarmine, and it was, their motto was men for others. And I was like, oh yeah, dude. And I really embraced that. I have some really great friendships from high school that I still keep in touch with. Like, those are my best friends. Cause it was like, you went to school and it was academics and athletics. There was no girls. So I wasn't distracted. I wasn't, you know, anyway, I think it comes from that kind of a thing, but maybe, I don't know. That's my guess. And then Your second question, I forgot.
So your inability to cope when you lost your job, your depression, yes. Where do you think, is that something you had seen in the past, or was that your real true test, your first true test in life as a major shit?
Yeah. I think personally for me, it was my real first test in life. And I know the reason why I was so depressed is because that's my identity. Like,
Sure.
Every summer in high school, I would work at my parents' own private daycare centers in elementary schools in the Bay Area. And they'd be like, oh, hey, you know, this summer we need you to be the first grade teacher's aide. Oh, this summer you got to be in the infant and toddler room. Oh, this summer you're in the potty training room. This summer you're teaching pre-K. This summer you're driving kids to and fro swim practice to the Y and back. Like, it, whatever it was that they didn't have at the time, that was my job. And I loved teaching that kind of style every summer. And then, like, I got into college and I thought I was going to be like a fish and wildlife game guy. And then I thought I was going to be an ocean biographer, just all these different jobs. And I was taking forever. It was like, I would go work and anyway, at the end I was like, I got to fucking graduate. Like, I got to do something. And I was like, what will afford me the life of a student? Like, I loved it. And I was like, oh, I could be a teacher. I'll get summers off, you know, and 2 weeks of Christmas. So I was like, I'm in, and that was it. But so I think the reason was I was so depressed is because I lost my sense of self, my identity. I was a teacher. I didn't want to do it anymore.
Wasn't just a 9-to-5 job for you. This was a very big part of your identity.
Mm-hmm.
If not the biggest part. Society, your little inner circle just looked at you and said, nah, go away. Man, that's got to be traumatizing. But to your credit, the second time around when this happened, you're like, not again. I learned the first time. I'm going to hit the ground running and I'm going to just get on the phone and start making some calls and skip a few steps. Here you are.
Yeah.
And your position that you're like, holy shit, this is awesome. And on top of that, things started improving with the wife, but they weren't so cut and dry, were they? Because you and I have been speaking together off and on for, well, months now. It's the beginning of the year. And it wasn't easy. Can you tell us about some of your hiccups along the way and some of the detours you had to take?
Bro, first off, I read your book and I'm like, oh, dude, I've got the game plan. It's on now. And in your book somewhere, you were like, you know, don't do this. Don't start being like this sexual until you're like 5, 6, 7, 8 months into it. And it was like 2 weeks in and I'm like, all right, I'm buying sex toys. And I'm like, hey, babe, we're going to use this. She's like, what the fuck? Where is this coming from?
Yeah.
I remember like writing in the Facebook group and you're like, whoa, 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 hold your horse, slow down, you know? And I'm like, what? And you're like, dude, you're like the 900 pound bearded lady, you know, like.
For those that don't know, that didn't read the book, that's just a little, I guess you'd say, an analogy that I had, that men that are all trying to be hypersexual with a wife that is obviously not turned on, you're in essence kind of a 900 pound bearded woman if you want to look at it that way. So, no, you know, if a 900 pound bearded woman showed up to my front door and she's the nicest, sweetest, most amazing, and we really click mentally and so forth, I don't care. All that doesn't matter because she's still a 900 pound bearded woman and there's no attraction there and it's never, ever going to happen. That's how a lot of our wives look at us when they're kind of painted into a corner by life, whatever it may be, whatever outside circumstances may be, whatever the husband may have done or not done. And she's just not in that headspace. She is just not there. And to say, hey, look, here's a vibrator. You might as well just take a giant shit on top of her. It's the same kind of thing. it's like, where did this come from? Get away. And that's what you saw. What is this? Get away. And that's got to be crushing to a man, because you think you probably had somewhere a little glimmer of hope. You instilled some of what you saw in the book and you saw a little something from her, a little spark. And you're like, here we go. We're off to the races. Boom. And yeah. Bring on the porno. And no.
So I was like, yeah, skipping chapter one and going to chapter 12, you know, just trying to like go right to the end. So it was just a lot of that. I mean, you really, like, I did some counseling sessions with you. I did three, and then I would email you every now and then, and I'd be like, wait, you know, why isn't she responding to this? Or what do I need to do here? And you're like, dude, you are so, you're very like the puppy, like the neediness. You got to back off from her. You got to give her some space. You got to, like, you're always talking about sex, or you're always pressuring her. Like, I would either tell you or email you like exact texts that she's like, or she'd email me back like, you cannot do this to me. I don't feel, you know, I feel pressured. I feel this. And I'm like, damn, what is her problem? And you're just like, look, you're very excitable. You're very like, oh yeah, let's go. Let's do this. You know? And I'm just like, he's so right. Like it took me. So for your comparison to all of your other people you've had, I feel like I'm a medium success story. Like, I hear dudes like Austin, like, boom, dude just goes with it and it fixes it within, like, it seems like 3 months. And Jack, they're like, oh, dude just has it and bang, he's on it. And it took me forever, and I'm still not like where I want it to be, but I'm definitely, you know, not where I was, and I'm thankful for that. But I'm like the type of person where, like, yeah, if we're drinking, I want to drink more. If we're smoking pot, I want to smoke more. It's like, oh, I have a saying, you know, the more the funner. And even though it's not Englishly grammatically correct, and everyone's like,
I get you.
Yeah.
Like, so you have a bit of a compulsive, maybe even an addictive side to you.
Yeah, but it's funny how, like, I've never,
like, it's never manifested itself in the way of something negative, like drinking, gambling, that kind of thing, drugs.
Yeah. It's never gone too exactly far. No. And I don't get angry when I'm drunk. I don't, you know, I'm not like, I don't know. Everyone's just like, yeah, you're fun to party with. And I'm like, yeah, dude, cause it's on, bro. I don't know. I'm just very positive and very happy most of the time. So yeah, I don't know. So I was, yeah, you were just like, dude, I had to get hit in the head over and over and over again, it seems like, to figure it out. And then finally I would try these little things that either you said, or I'd pick up from on the Facebook page or someone else. And I'd be like, he said this, or he did this. And I'm like, oh, what is if I just try it? You know, like, instead of using what I usually do, why don't you go against your instinct and try what someone else did? And I was like, holy fuck, it worked. Oh my God. And so that helped, because I would be like, all right, you've got to stop yourself, or start questioning yourself and do what you wouldn't do. And
which is also kind of a Seinfeld reference, isn't it?
That's true. That's right. What would Costanza do? And then he goes, do the opposite.
That's right. So you tried little things. You saw some quick little wins here and there. What were those wins like exactly? Just more affection from the wife?
Like, in our relationship before I lost my job, it was like, oh, you're amazing and you're sexy and stuff. And so I would try things then after reading the book, and I was getting those positives back. Like,
Validation, validation, validation.
All the validation.
That is everything to men. Any women listening to this, validation is everything to men. Women are amazed at just how little it takes to get a man. I was going to say turned on. That's not the right word. I don't mean sexually. I mean, turned on, just his spark comes back. Women can say something as simple as, "You look really good in that shirt." Oh my gosh. Men are just like, oh, it's like the heavens shine down on him and he's a new man. And she's like, well, that's all it took. Yeah. Cause ladies, you don't know this. We don't hear that shit very often. You ladies hear that all the time, every day, all day, from your girlfriends, from whoever, from a guy whistling across the street. Yeah, we just have our own little man existence, and to get that little validation, it's like heroin to us. But go on, continue.
Yeah, exactly. There was one, like, I think it was Austin, and he said something like, well, what I tried was like, I was massaging her, and then like kissing, it was really getting good, and she was like turned over. I was like, I'm gonna go to sleep now. I'm like, cool, you know, good night, you know, I can't wait. And after 5 minutes she's like, I can't sleep, I'm thinking about fucking you, I'm too turned on. I'm like, all right, let's do it, you know. It's like, I would have never in a million years, I would have been like, what, you're going to sleep, like I'm so, this is hot and this is great, this is, you know, let's fuck, you know.
And so you're thinking the turning point there for you, the mind shift, was when she rolls over and says good night. You didn't complain, you didn't whine, and you didn't attack her, you didn't, you just like, all right, cool, have a good night.
Yeah,
that's exactly which shows that non-neediness. You're not smothering her with I need, I want. You're just like, yeah, cool. Which in a roundabout way is, I don't really need you, woman, which gets the brain spinning. If he doesn't need me, why is that? You see that hive of value, that he's not begging for scraps anymore. And you know, the brain spins, and then it ends with the woman's final thought, which is, and why am I so turned on right now? And away you go.
Yeah. And
that's a big, big piece of the puzzle, is that neediness. Just squash that neediness. And so that was a major turning point for you. And I think that neediness kind of, it was an umbrella over a lot of your actions, wasn't it?
Oh, dude. Like you said, you just said smothering. I'm like, that's the word that you had said to me earlier, like months ago. I was totally smothering her. Like, she just felt like, she wasn't comfortable in her own skin. She, like, I'm always touching her. Like I was always around, and she's just like, she's like, I can't relax. And I'm like, what's up? You know, why not? I want to be with you. This is, you know. So that is totally true.
But to further complicate things, when you are in those early relationship years, she doesn't mind the hanging on her. She doesn't mind the, you're around 6 days a week. She's like, that's amazing. The puppy love is there. And she just wants to spend every moment. When she wakes up, she thinks about you. When she goes to bed, she thinks about you. But you know, to all the guys listening to this that are deep into marriage, those years are over. And it takes a different kind of mindset and a different game plan to get those juices flowing again, so to speak. And that's what you learned. It's like you go from woohoo to that's kind of needy. And you're like, oh, all right. Yeah, a big part of it is you need to go back to who you were when you first met, but it not 100%. You can never go back there. A lot of guys who discover their wives in affairs, they see that hypersexualization, that hyper-attachment and so forth, and they take that to mean like, look at the loser she's with. She obviously wants losers, and I'm more of a loser than he is, obviously, blah, 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 blah. And they go down all that self-defeating bullshit. And it's basically like, no, you just forgot what it was like when you guys first met, and you have a front row seat for it, and you're watching. Unfortunately, it's your wife or watching with another person, but that's how that goes. And a lot of us stick to that same game plan of, okay, why isn't this just naturally happening right now with a little effort on my part? Come on, let's go, woman. Chop, chop. Let's get the sex on the road. And she's like, hello. It doesn't work that way anymore. And that's what you learn the hard way. It doesn't work that way anymore. And sometimes things like, you lost your job. Oh, yeah. Just, I think we're going to shut down sex for the next 3 months because I'm totally turned off right now. Guys, like, what the hell? It's like, yeah, welcome to marriage. Sucks, but that's a big part of it. Any other incidents that have kind of piled on to lead you to where you are today?
Yeah. I mean, just like last month. So she's teaching and she's in, like, she wears a mask all day. All the kids wear a mask. So she's really deep in COVID, you know, like that's the, her world is like, you have to be super safe and all that. So I was like trying to think of something we could do for fun that's got those parameters around it. And my buddy was like, dude, hey, let's go watch this movie on a boat out in the San Diego Bay and it's outdoors. And I was like, oh, that sounds awesome. And I asked her like a week before, like, hey, no pressure. Just, do you want to go and do this? And she was like, oh, I'm working. I'm really tired. You know, it's really hard. And COVID, I'm just not there. I'm like, cool. No worries. Don't. That's what I just said. Like, no pressure. You can say yes or no. And then the day before, it was like, all right. She's like saying something about tomorrow night. I'm like, oh no, I'm going to go watch this movie. I'm already asked Eddie if he wants to go, you know? And she's like, what? I'm like, yeah. And the next day I had a sports coat on. She's like, she started flipping out, like just reacting weirdly.
Oh really?
Oh yeah. She was like, wait, did you already bought the tickets and what, you know, and you look good, you know? And I was like, yeah, you know, hey, that's why I asked you if you wanted to go. There was no pressure. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't say I wasn't going.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, you tapped into something, which is kind of a dating 101 that I often say to guys who are newly divorced and get into the dating thing. It's, you know, they'll ask a gal like, do you want to go to the bowling alley next Friday? Do you want to go see a movie? No. And I say, here's how you should frame it. I think you just stumbled upon it, which is, I'm going to the bowling alley Friday. Want to join me? Totally different tone, which is one of, I'm doing this. You want to come along for the ride? Yes or no? And that has a far better sense of, for lack of a better word, masculinity, being in charge, being a guy who's off doing something with or without her. And that's what you just did the same thing. I'm going to this thing with my buddy. You want to go? Nope. All right. I didn't say I wasn't going.
Yeah.
And then, okay. So she had a little bit of a flip out. What the hell? And then from there, did she go along with you or did you go and have your adventure without her?
Yeah. Went without her. Okay. And then, she was like upset that night, upset the next day. And the next night she was like, talk to me about it. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I just kept my stance of like, I really didn't want to pressure you. I wanted you to decide for yourself. And that was your decision.
And that's perfectly cool.
Yep. And it really de-escalated and she was all cuddly. And the next day she was all lovey. And then I asked her like maybe a week or two after that, like, hey, you know, my birthday's coming up. You want to go to Oceanside with me? And I was thinking like we could go axe throwing and we could just walk around the shops and stuff. And she was like, axe throwing? I'm like, yeah, you know, it'd be fun. Like I remember it from you had put out something on our Facebook page. Yep. Like a year ago. Like, hey, these
I
are
did 10, that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You could like, here's 10 things that I would do, you know, with my wife, that would be something fun to do, get out of your comfort zone. So I was like, that sounds like fun. I'm going to do that. And so she goes along with me. First 15, 20 minutes, she's really scared. And after our hour of session afterwards, she's like, that was so fun. I'm like, I know, right? Like, she's like, we got to get the kids to go next time. And in my head, I'm like, fuck. The only reason I did this because I want to be with you and not with the kids. But I'm like, oh yeah, sure. You know, that'd be fun too.
Yeah.
But it just was a blast. You know, it was really cool. Got the adrenaline going, you know, that kind of a thing. There was something else that happened. Like now I'm drawing a blank, but anyway, it'll come back to me hopefully. But the more you say, the more things pop up.
So you had all of these little wins along the way, little moments of aha, I'm onto something here. It seems to all have the general theme of setting your neediness aside and watching her kind of blossom as a result, where the pressure is off of her. And that's something that a lot of us guys do not appreciate, is just how much our emotionality, or I'm starting to see, the more we show that we are very pliable to their emotion, that we dictate our lives based upon their needs, their wants, their emotions, how much they can guide us, makes them respect us less. And it also instills them with some anxiety, because that's a lot of pressure on a person. Like, wow, I'm emotionally, or this person is emotionally dependent upon me, so I'm emotionally responsible for them. First of all, that's not very attractive. And second of all, that's a lot of pressure. Jeez. On top of kids and job and everything else, I got to worry about this guy. And then all of a sudden it's, no, you don't have to worry about me anymore. I'm cool. In fact, I'm going to go have an evening with some friends, with or without you. And look how handsome I am later. Wow, what a table turn. And anytime you have those table turn moments, you're going to see what you saw, what were these acute little emotional moments of lashing out, anxiety. I don't like this. This is unusual. This makes me feel uneasy. What the hell's going on? I'm concerned. Followed shortly thereafter by, and yet I feel better. And yet I'm turned on. And yet I feel more at ease. And yet I'm more attracted to you. Thank you. And that's what you're seeing. It's the big thank you at the end. Yeah.
Yeah. There is no vocal thank you, but yes, there's
it, the, by her actions, which mean way more than what comes out of her mouth.
Exactly. Like you were saying something that stuck with me for a long time. Like if she doesn't respect you, she's not fucking you, or, you know, believe her actions and not her words or something like that. And I was like, yeah, dude, like she'll say stuff, but she doesn't do any of, does the opposite. And I'm like, okay.
Esther Perel, the author who's sold a bazillion books, and she had a book that is somewhat similar to The Dead Bedroom Fix. It takes more of a female approach to the general feelings around what we notice, which is once you're within, or the book's called Mating in Captivity, but the general theme is once you're in these comfortable, safe, one-on-one forever relationships, the general tone of eroticism and sexuality and everything just goes, the knob gets turned way down. Why is that? And she talks about that. And she says in the book that, and it may be in that book or her other book, which is called The State of Affairs, which very good partner book to that, which is Why People Cheat. And she put in there something, I don't remember verbatim what it was, but the essence was that one of the biggest fears that women have within the relationship is that deep down, their man is actually a weak little boy. He's not the strong oak of a guy that she hopes, crosses her fingers, that he is. And when she sees that vulnerability and that weakness come out, it's just destroying for her, or to her. It's just, she didn't want to see that. She wants to show that, in fact, this guy can tolerate a lot in life. And as you and I know, and as every guy in long-term relationships will know, how does she do that? Well, sometimes she just sits back and watches how you react to life. And sometimes she throws little things at you just to see how it is you handle them. And she may not be consciously or overtly doing this, but she's doing it. And have you seen throughout your changes, these tests, as we call them, being thrown at you from her?
Just those reaction things. I haven't, like, I keep waiting for this, like, shit test here or there, you know? Like, and she's not like that, which is, it's weird, but.
Well, that was an effective test, wasn't it? When you came back from your trip and she gave you the, what the hell? I don't like this. What's going on? You could have been like, I'm sorry. You're right. I'm sorry. That wasn't thoughtful of me. I should have stayed home, you know, blah, 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 blah. Majority of men would do that.
Right.
And the majority of men are stuck in relationships with a wife. It's like, I don't respect him. And I'm not really sure why. But so test passed. The emotionality came and went, and you were left with a lovey-dovey wife. You know, who would have thunk it?
Yeah,
there you go. So here you are. You're having these little moments. And I could sense in you, just in your via your Facebook postings in our group. And for those that don't know, Jason is a member of the DSO fraternity, and we have these private groups on Facebook, which you can belong to and talk on a variety of different topics. But the tone of your messages went from one of, man, I don't know what the F. I just don't, this is annoying. This back and forth. I don't get it. And the tone shifted to very much a, I guess like a eureka tone. Like, I got it. It's working. And it's been consistently working now for X number of weeks, months. Yay, raw, look at me, which is awesome. So kudos to you. Congratulations on that. But
thank you.
But where do you have some need for some improvement? Where's some room for improvement? Where do you see yourself kind of falling down from here? And you know, let's look at the next year out. There's always obstacles in the way. Where can you improve?
Oh, well, I think that's easy for me. I just finished reading The Masculine in Relationships, and it reinforced a lot of things. If it just, I guess, because it was said in a different tone, you know, or a different way. It's kind of cool. Like those books you mentioned by Esther, I read that one, The Mating in Captivity. No More and Mr. Nice Guy didn't really resonate with me after I read it. So, you know, everyone's got their different things, but to me, it's like the neediness. Like I feel like I need to have that validation. I need to have that affection. If I don't, she doesn't love me. Those thoughts, you know, in my head, like I think from years of conditioning and years of like just being that little boy or that puppy, like I know that like I need to just keep working on that those inner thoughts, those kind of feelings, those kind of like whatever that is. I don't know what the particular name of that is. So
now this leads into the next school of thought, which is a criticism of my book, usually by those who haven't read it, strangely enough. And that is, oh, wow, yet again, another book or another thing telling us that this is all man's fault. To which I always respond to, read the book, read it all the way through to the end, and then you will realize that's not necessarily the case. So flipping that back to you, what are some things that your wife needs to work on? Because she's not infallible here. She brings her baggage. She has her vices. She has her negatives. Where would you like to see her improve?
Definitely like following through on her word, being consistent. You know what I mean? Like when I really started being consistently working out, she started working out too. And the kids kind of followed along. And my youngest really got into it, training and working out. And so I see how my wife will say things, but then she doesn't follow through. So I'm like, you know, that would really be a good thing for her overall, because she's happier when she's either working out or eating right. And I hear a lot of complaining from her. So that would be cool to like, you know, get her off of the, oh, my arthritis, or, oh, I'm so cold, or, oh, this and oh, that. I'm like, oh yeah, that sucks, babe. Too bad. You know, like, I think I used to just be like, oh, what can I do for you? How can I help you? And now I'm just like, yeah, dude, that's too bad. You know, and then change the subject and do something else.
So, which leads to another question is, since going through this metamorphosis yourself and your sense of value, I'm putting words in your mouth, but I would assume that your sense of inner value has gone up. You look at yourself differently. And as a result, you look across the table at your wife and you look at her differently. And be honest, has your vision, your opinion of your wife, has that been decimated somewhat by your changes? I hear what you just described there was I wish I had some more respect for my wife, is in general what you just said. I wish she would follow through on what she does, because that's something that garners respect from me towards others. And I don't see that in her. So has your view of her taken a hit?
Wow, that's a good deep question. Cause I was trying to figure out the other day, I was like looking at her face and I was like noticing wrinkles that I haven't noticed before. And I'm like, you know, like, does that, you know, like, am I not as attracted to her because I'm noticing this shit, you know? It's like the blinds being lifted,
the rose colored glasses coming off a bit.
Yeah. And I was just like, didn't even know this is
a very real phenomenon. And this is one I'm getting into more with the guys that I'm talking to, because I've done this for a while now. I'm starting to see the fruits of my labor, so to speak. And I'm talking to guys who are like, man, the marriage is just 180 degrees better. Thank you so much. This is awesome. But, and here comes the big but, and this is ironically what women fear when in a relationship. This is why your wife's like, why are you dressed up like that? Why are you going out without me? Where have you been for the last couple hours? It's because they're worried that you will, no offense to all the wives out there, that you will upgrade. I mean, how often do we know of the rich older man? I've shared before, I know a story of a guy who was 70 some odd years old, big time in his field, profession wise, been married for a bazillion years to a 70 some year old wife. And then in comes the 30 some year old sexy Brazilian woman. And he said, adios, 70 year old wife. And we were all like, wow, are you kidding me? Respect for this man just went in the toilet. But in a sense, don't we all as guys go, I can kind of see. Yeah, he's an asshole for doing it. He needs to be faithful to his wife and be there till death do us part. And they've been through so much together. They have children, grandchildren. And all it takes is some little 30-some-year-old to wave her butt in his face and off he goes. So women have a very real reason for being a little fearful, a little anxious about a guy increasing his value to the point where more options open up to him. And I've talked to guys who have said, I've gone through my changes. I've lost 30 pounds. I look better. I feel better. I got a better job, a better car. We're in a bigger house. Everything is awesome. Thank you so much. And I've started an emotional affair with some 23-year-old from the office. It's like, oh, dude, that's not the point of the book. But I can see how that happens for sure. So what you're seeing is kind of a minor league version of that, aren't you? Which is, she's kind of been knocked off the pedestal here somewhat. And she's not this superhuman after all. She has her flaws. And just like me, she farts and goes to the bathroom and everything else. And she's not so perfect anymore. So what have you done with this, I guess you could say, new information coming in, this new mindset? You can take it one way, which is become more resentful of her, or you can take it the other way, which is I'm going to work even harder on this relationship in terms of showing my appreciation and trying to lead her to be more of the person I'm attracted to. Which direction do you see yourself going in?
Personally, I feel like the second one, but I feel like I don't have the game plan for it. You know, like I want to lead. I want to figure out how to like do that. I bet it's possible. And I really love her and I would love to be able to like, not change her, but like you said, lead, you know? And I'm like, how do you do that? So I'm just,
stage. And that sounds to some people listening to this probably on the surface a bit misogynistic. I'm going to lead. I'm the boss, damn it. We're going to do it this way. No, that's not what that means. But in a way it is. But let's be honest, when we look at where the healthiest, happiest relationships that we know of, it's one where that has a bit of that tone, doesn't it? Where the man's kind of the one that she looks up to. And we see it again and again. And I often say, like I said in the book, where women that are in relationships where they're gaga for the men, they will very much mold themselves to take the shape. I always say that women kind of take the shape of whatever container you pour them into. If they're in a relationship where they're gaga over a guy, we see that big time where a woman who's like, I hate football. I hate everything to do with football. And then she meets Mr. Wonderful and suddenly she's wearing football jerseys and she's painting her face and she's going to football games every Sunday. Woo! And you're like, well, where did this woman come from? Well, because he likes football. I love him. Therefore, I like football. So this goes back to the point of leading, which is kind of a natural state when the relationship is healthy, and that you'll notice I'm doing these things. And if she in fact is impressed enough by it, or if she in fact is saying, here's the guy who's got it going on. He's got a mission. I like where he's going in life. I'm attracted to him. I'm going to do these same things too. And so many guys I've talked to where the wife's like, can I go to the gym with you? Can I join that CrossFit class with you? Even to the point of, can I hang out with you and the boys when you guys go to the bar for your weekly beer? Is that okay? There's a bit of anxiety there about, can I keep tabs on you? But also she just loves to be around him and loves to follow his lead. I did a podcast interview with another podcast called The Divorced Dadvocate. And he was very sensitive to the fact that people were kind of cringing at the thought of being a leader. And he says, well, if it helps, look at it in terms of called being a good steward of the relationship. You know, you're the one kind of sitting back as you can call it a boss role and saying the relationship's kind of going off the rails a little bit. Let me put it back on the tracks. And so for you guys listening out there, like leading makes me feel a little uneasy. Well, just You're the guy who's kind of the overseer of the relationship, and you realize what it takes. And doing those things like I'm going to the gym, I'm going surfing, going to hang out with my buddies. They may sound counterintuitive, but man, they're good for the relationship. Shows that you're an independent person. And she better kind of jump on the train and do things for herself too. I think every guy who's healthy, has a healthy mindset and a healthy relationship, will say, I love if my wife were to go hang out with her friend for coffee and get out of the house. I would love if she went and she took surfing lessons. I would love for her to go to the gym, to that class. That'd be great. Good for you. Have at it. Because who comes back in the door? A healthier, happier, more attractive wife. And what a lot of guys have trouble with is the fact that a lot of women, not all, but a lot of women don't really do that on their own. They need somebody to give them a little push. And if we're the guy to do that pushing, that seems to lead to a lot of very good, healthy things for relationship. Because if you're not the one to say, wife, you're capable of more, let's do this, then somebody or something else out there will be. And they may push them in the wrong direction. A lot of guys, myself included, have seen that with our first relationships where somebody lit a spark under their butt and away they went. And you want to be that dude. So that's your next chapter in this whole thing, isn't it? Which is, how can I kind of lead her? And to put it in very blunt, negative terms, how can I lead her so she doesn't become somebody that I no longer want to be with?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I used to do that, obviously, unconsciously, with when you were talking right there, I was thinking about all of my past relationships and even the first 10 years with her. I'm like, oh my God, I'd always be like, hey, you want to go? Yeah. Me and the boys are going to go drinking, you know, you want to go? And she'd be like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And now it's like,
there it is. Do you want to come along for the ride? I'm going to be here. What do you say? No. All right, cool. I'll see you on Saturday.
Yeah, totally.
That's that dating atmosphere. We got to hang on to that. Got to hang on as much as we can within the marriage. Can't hang on to all of it, but as much as we can. I would recommend, if the leading thing is a big part, maybe book a session with Jack London, who's now coaching, and a big part of his whole repertoire is the being a good leader. He's a military man. He knows that better than anybody. So he'd be a good person for you to chat with and put together a game plan for that. He's much more qualified than I am in that regard. not to say I'm a horrible leader, but man, he's good at what he does. Those military guys are good at that. So yeah, definitely give him a jingle. So where else? Where do you go from here? any final words?
I was going to be like, hey, you're supposed to tell me, man. You know, like.
So, I mean, the leadership is one thing. So get to it. Whether you go get help with that or whatever, you know what to do, then do it. You need some help and get some help. But that's the next level. Because I hate, for a year from now, I get an email from you saying, so this 23-year-old texted me. I'm like, oh shit, here we go.
Right, right.
And just so we're clear for everyone listening, my book at the end of it, not to give away the ending, but it does say, to men that are in toxic relationships with a woman, has obviously lost all attraction to the man. She's just hanging on, you know, for resources, and she treats him like dirt. There's don't stay in those relationships. But also at the same time, don't go running off to every floozy and banging every bimbo that you can see. Do it the right way. If you've checked out of the relationship, then you've checked out. Do the right thing and divorce and do it amicably and everything else. But do all you can to stay within the relationship. Marriages are tough. They're hard work. Anybody who tells you any difference, bullshitting you. Once you get past the puppy love stage, it's all work. But I personally think it's worth it if it's done right. But if it's toxic and there's no hope there, then I'm the first to tell you, you know, pull the ripcord and get the hell out. So as your value increases, as you're not quite 50 yet, your old man out surfing in sunny California, and your value's going up, you're going to have some temptations. So just be aware.
I got about a month ago, my wife got her first new car ever, right? It's like this 2020 hybrid Subaru Crosstrek. And then 2 weeks later, I found this 1990 Jeep Grand Wagoneer. It's got nice wood paneling.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. I love those.
Oh my God. Like every other day I got this girl like, oh, wow. Nice really? Car. Interesting. I got surfer dudes, you know, like, oh, dude, I had this way back. Oh,
that's a total surfer mobile. Yeah.
Oh, dude, this one girl was like, hey, can I get a ride in your car? I was like, oh, I'm going. This is where I'm going. She's like, oh, I got to go this way. I'm like, next time, you know, like, sorry, babe. I'm not going to just drive you down there this way because you want, you know.
And how interesting that the whole tone of this is shifting from a needy guy who's like, how can I get my wife to bang me? To now this guy with this sense of abundance and value who is like, has to learn how to put up some boundaries to keep the temptations away. Welcome to the world of being a value dude.
Thanks. Yeah. Hey, that's the goal, man. And I feel there confident. It is. I feel good about myself. I was telling my wife, like, babe, this job has afforded me to, like, I can take my kid to wrestling practice. I get to actually be there. And it's just like, it's just everything, man. Mm-hmm. I'm thankful for you. I appreciate you. Everything you've done. Like, I see how you help everyone else. It's just like, I love being in the group and giving my 2 cents when I can. And it just overall makes me feel like, yeah, like you said, a better man. I'm like, wow, this is awesome. It's too bad I found it so late, but what am I going to do? I'm going to bitch and moan about, like, oh, I wish I had this.
There you go. Yeah.
You know, like, well, you can sit and mope all day, or you can fucking grab it by the fucking nards and get after it, you know?
Grab it by the fucking nards. That's a good, that's a good outro right there.
All right. Well,
Jason, thank you so much. I appreciate it, buddy. And best of luck to you. Keep in touch. I'll see you on the group. And I mean, it's not all wine and roses from here on out. You're going to have some more tests. You're going to have some more obstacles. You're going to have more pool noodle incidents. Hopefully not literally another pool noodle incident,
right.
But you're going to have some oh shit moments, but I can feel and I can sense you're in a much better place to deal with all that. So it's just sky's the limit from here. So best of luck to you.
Thank you very much, DSO.
Thank you. You have a good one.
All right.
All right, bye.
Bye.